Welcome to the Funny Mummies podcast. I'm your host, Hattie Ashdown, and mum to two feral boys. Join us as I welcome a different mum every episode from the world of comedy, as we give no judgment, no filter, but all the laughs on this crazy ride of parenting, work, and being bloody great women.
Happy Mother's Day! Happy Mother's Day! Happy Mother's Day!
Okay, hello and welcome to the Funny Mummies. I'm Hattie Ashdown, mother of two, whose child this week stuck an elastic band ball in their ear. And talking of kids getting something stuck, someone who knows how to get a bin lid off a kid's head, my trusty friend and yours, Gemma Beagley.
Hi, I'm Gemma Beagley, and this week my son had a meltdown at my mum's 70th birthday where he said, "I just thought it would be better."
Facts. We'll get into that more. So, but we just want to bring on our guest today because she's not just a comedian, journalist, and she's our friend, isn't she? She's a friend of the show. She's not in here. She's a regular to our show, so she doesn't really need any introduction. But for those that are new to the podcast, I will. She's done 5 Edinburgh shows. I'm hoping she'll just not... shake her head if I'm getting this wrong. 7 BBC radio plays, 6 books published, soon to be 7.
5, soon to be 6. Although I have just signed a contract on the 7th, so yeah.
Yes, so exclusive. Let's just say that.
Heard it here first.
In the last 10 years, and this is thanks to an update she did on Instagram, so it was like she did all the intro work for me today. she's a journalist, comedian, mum of 3, our friend Viv Groskop.
Yay! I'm so thrilled to be back here.
She's back. In person, because we've done a lot with Zoom on with you.
Yeah, we did a lot in lockdown, didn't we?
We did. We all got each other through.
I love coming to see you guys because your children are much younger than mine, who are 12, 16 and 19.
We were trying to remember how old they were.
The days of the bin lid are far behind me.
And putting things in your ears.
Yeah. So now my problems are more like how to get people up out of bed before 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Why hasn't anyone emptied the dishwasher? Why do we have so much oat milk?
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. Yeah, it's very different problems.
2023 problems.
Yeah. 2023 middle class problems.
So who's at home? So 19.
So at home at the moment is my 19-year-old who's come back from university. He's just finished his first year at university in Edinburgh. Of course, he's obsessed with Edinburgh because he spent every single summer there while he was growing up. Yeah. So that's my fault that he's so far away. And then Vera, who's 16, so she's doing her A-levels. And Jack, who is finished his second year at secondary school.
Right. Yeah. So your new book, Happy High Status, I'm going to ask you, we sort of know, of course, but where does the expression come from? Why this topic? Why now? Why you, Viv?
Yes. Great, great.
Who do you think
questions.
You are to write this book?
Yes. Well, as you ladies know, and anyone else who's ever done anything in performing, comedy, acting, this idea of status and happy high status has been around since the theories of improv first emerged from the 50s and the 60s. For anybody who doesn't know much about improv, it's basically Whose Line Is It Anyway? All of the Saturday Night Live, the tradition of Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. It's the comedy where you go on stage and you don't know what the script is. No one knows what's going to happen. So an easy, fast rule as to let's work out what's going to happen next is for everyone to establish their status. So in normal life, we think of status as being, do you have a Ferrari? Right. Do you have a child who's going to go to Oxbridge? Or do you have a child who's got trapped in a bin lid? What is your status?
Yes.
What is your social status? But status on stage, and when we read it, when we're looking at people, is totally different. Really good way to think about this is if you think of Succession. I don't know if you guys have been watching Succession. But in that, everybody is mega, mega high status in social status terms because they're all filthy rich. But in terms of the status of their relationships to each other, it's very fragile and it's always moving because they all want to be the heir to the fortune. So it's a good way for people to understand that status is not necessarily about how much money you've got or whether you've got a great job or all of that stuff that we think is status. Status is really how comfortable are you in yourself? Have you got everything that you want? Have you, and I mean that in a very sort of holistic and spiritual Oprah kind of way. Are you comfortable with who you are? And the people who are that way, they have happy high status. Typical examples of people in the public eye you can picture for this, Oprah certainly got it, Michelle Obama, Volodymyr Zelensky. You know, these are people who really can lead, but only by permission. They're not people who are pushing themselves in your face saying, you better do what I say or else. This is very much not the only way to move through life. I'm not going to be sending a copy to Donald Trump or Vladimir Putin anytime soon. There are many ways to achieve success, in inverted commas, and leadership, just as there are many ways to parent. You can parent like a fairly open person, or you can parent like a fascist. It is up to you to decide. But what I'm trying to do with this book and with this idea is show people that you don't have to be hamstrung by this idea of confidence, which I think is a bit of a straitjacket for people, because from childhood we've been told, oh, you're too confident, you know, pipe down, or you're not confident enough, why don't you speak up? We get so many mixed messages about confidence. So I wanted to use this idea of happy high status, borrowing this knowledge that we already all have, even though we don't know it, about reading status all of the time. We read status when we're watching any film, anything on TV, and when we're in social situations, we're always reading who's up, who's down, who's really got the power, who's okay with themselves, who isn't. Using that knowledge to think more about how we can feel more comfortable with ourselves without having to have all the baggage that comes with confidence.
Do you see confidence as a behaviour rather than an inside thing?
Oh, that's a brilliant question, Gemma. Yes, so what you're asking is, it's a sort of nature versus nurture, are you asking there? Like, are you born with it, or is it something that you can acquire? I've done a lot of reading around this, and I don't base a lot of what I talk about in neuroscience or academic research. I sort of borrow from those things occasionally, but I always find that with a lot of that research, it's very easily contradicted. You can find research that will argue people are born with a lot of confidence, and then one that will argue the complete opposite. So I tend to act on what I've observed and what I think people understand, and what I've just definitely observed from performers as well. And I think, you know, from people in comedy, even the ones who are really born with it and seem quite entitled and are really comfortable with themselves, it's not necessarily going to transfer on stage. And also, it's not necessarily going to transfer over the long term. So I think a lot of these behaviours that we call confidence, that are to do with being comfortable with yourself, they are easier to acquire and to develop than they are to be born with. I don't believe that you can be born totally confident and everything in your life stacks up and it's all great and then you're completely unassailable. There's nobody like that.
Well, because I was thinking about, you know, when you're really young, little girl and whatever, and people will go, oh, wasn't she confident? And it'll always be the kid that comes in and starts singing and dancing. That's what our perception of what we thought confidence was.
Yeah, or being, you know, out there.
Out there and, you know, asking a question or, you know, whatever. But also I was thinking about the thing of whether, you know, you're kind of born with it or not, is charisma. And that's something I just think sometimes you are born with. I see it in little children, you know, just they just have this. My mum would go, like, they've been here before. But
oh, that is so brilliant. I love that. Yeah, charisma is a really interesting, I think, subset of confidence and happy high status. I do think charisma is something like extreme beauty. I mean, these are things that you can't...
We all suffer with on this table.
We all know what that's like, that burden.
It's a burden.
There are things that you are born with, certain qualities, but I think life can knock those out of you.
Right.
So it's not necessarily foolproof anyway. But there are, you know, there are lots of individuals. You know, Bill Clinton was a sort of famously charismatic individual. One of the common hallmarks of that kind of charisma is that they make you feel like you're the only person in the room.
You're listening to the Funny Mummy podcast.
Yay!
Now can I go back?
Yeah.
The thing I'm trying to get at with happy high status, though, is don't be fooled by these ideas that we have of charisma, confidence. Are you born with it? Are you not? Don't be fooled by those things, because they really don't give you any leeway to change, to approach challenges. And they're not really true.
No.
They're really things that are used to control us and to keep us small.
Because I wasn't a confident child. I would have said, and I have to keep reminding myself that with my kids, when like they're both very different, and my youngest keeps sort of saying, oh, I don't want to do that because I'm shy, and because the other one isn't, he's complete opposite. And then I remember, like, oh, I wasn't the one in the school productions. I wasn't the one in the band. I was the one with the sticks when I desperately didn't want to be just playing the sticks. It took me...
This is very strange, playing of the sticks. Do you mean playing the drums or literally getting
two sticks. Did you not have that in the band?
Claves? Are they called
claves?
The claves. The two sticks.
But they're just sticks.
The 1980s education.
Yes, I'm literally... It's a picture of me in my bridesmaid dress that I wore for my sister's wedding, because, you know, they say wear your best dress, and then there I am playing the clays, and I know that I would have liked to put my hand up to say I wanted to play the triangle, but I didn't have the confidence. The triangle always got a bit of a solo, bing 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 bing. Anyway, and
we'll
I'll
get you a triangle for your birthday. Thank you.
But the point is, I don't know how or what, because that's something I probably need to analyse with you for another time, Viv. I did get more confidence, but I think probably through finding something I really loved, which was going to college, doing performing arts. And it was that little bit of like, these are my people. But I wasn't like that at school.
Yeah.
I was more shy.
Yeah, I met a woman last night who was asking me a lot of questions about her children and the question of confidence. And I was just thinking, I'm not Miriam Stoppard. I'm not qualified to answer these questions.
We are,
but I can only...
What is wrong with my kids?
But I did... talk to her a lot about some of the examples that I give of what I call vulnerable happy high status.
Yes.
So that would be exemplified by someone like Greta Thunberg. And the important side note there as well is all confidence is like beauty in the eye of the beholder. So it's completely subjective. So loads of people will listen to this and say, oh, I can't stand Greta Thunberg. I think she's really annoying. And other people might say, oh, no, she's really inspiring because she's developed a way of speaking and of leading that is extremely original and fresh
and
quiet
and
personal and authentic. And but over years, because they're true. What if your child, who, you know, she was saying, my son's really shy, he doesn't speak up, he doesn't want to put himself forward. Well, what if he is Greta Thunberg? I mean, there's just so narrow a definition of what confidence is. And it feels to me like it fits much more with the 1980s idea of Gordon Gekko style, go for the corner office kind of confidence that we've really grown out of. And we see so many examples now, especially of young people and all the conversation around neurodiversity and inclusion and diversity generally. These things don't have to look like a certain thing. And what I'm trying to do is open people up to the idea that it might be something that we haven't seen yet. And so maybe your child is going to have a kind of a confidence that maybe leads from the back or influences from outside the room, or is the person who actually listens really, really hard and then knows what's really going on. Because that's also confidence.
I'm very interested in, you talk about the sort of quiet, calm confidence, because I have always, this is how I've seen myself, right or wrong, the louder, more entertaining confidence. But I'm now, as I'm maturing in my years, I want that sort of quieter confidence, mainly because I also don't like, someone said a job I left recently, and I was managing people. And she said it in a very nice sort of way, but she was like, oh, well, you know what you like, you're all scatty. And I hate that word, scatty. But I know that, but that was because I think the scattiness came from different bits I wasn't confident about. Do you see what I mean? So I'd be like, oh, just put that. Yeah, just put that there. No, I don't know. You know, that sort of thing. And if I don't do that, the other alternative, which is what I was doing earlier when we came in here, I was worried I was bossing them about. Because, so I'll go from like scatty to worrying I'm too bossy. So I just want to find this calm confidence.
Well, knowing you as I do, Hattie.
Yes, Viv.
I would say good luck with that.
Oh, no!
But it's not your natural self. But why should you want to be something that you're not? I would, you know, just breathe deep and embrace your hattiness.
Okay.
So and other people may put labels on that. So yeah. They may call that scatty or they may call it some other name that you don't like.
Yeah.
But that has more to do with them and their energy and what they expect and how they move through the world than it really has anything to do with you.
We've got a listener question. Should we do that now?
Yeah.
We've got it on voice note, Viv.
Oh my goodness, it's all mod cons around here, isn't it?
Modern.
Forget your claves. So we've got voice notes coming in now.
Answers on the back of a postcard, stuck down envelope.
Hello, funny mummies. I'm so excited for your up-and-coming guest, Viv. I know, just started listening to her podcast, actually. And do you know what? I just had to get a question into you guys. And basically, I've been sort of, I've been navigating a few of my own parenting 101 issues. And however, how do we bring confidence to like navigating situations that basically you've never navigated before? So how do I feel confident in the unknown, if that makes sense? So how, especially when you're parenting, like how do you find that inner confidence that you're choosing the right path? Does that make sense? Hope so. Love the pod.
That's really lovely question. That is the $1 million question.
Is it?
Because everything is all very well if you can prepare and you can think in advance, what am I going to do in this situation and weigh up the options. But as this wonderful questioner suggests, real life is not like that. No. There's an article in the I newspaper today, actually, by a journalist who read the book and then tried to apply the ideas to her life. And that's exactly the question that she gets stuck on, because she thinks, oh, yeah, I get this. And if I've got a speaking engagement, I can do this. And Viv says, I can do that. And she's getting really into it. But then she says, oh, no, but what about the things where I've just got no idea and it comes out of nowhere?
Yeah.
And of course, Happy High Status is designed for that because it comes from improv. And in improv, you don't know what's going to happen next. So it should provide a useful framework. So the idea of using your status to respond to something uncertain is about digging really, really deep and recognizing that your instinct is good, you are enough, you will realize what's the right thing to do. If it turns out to be the wrong thing, you'll course correct. It's really about, this is not a quick fix, by the way. Anybody thinks there's a quick fix, there isn't. It's about recognizing that you need to develop a really deep trust in yourself, that you are going to figure out not necessarily the right thing, but the right thing to do for now. You will make a decision. Then maybe if there's more information that comes to light, you would change your decision. And so obviously you're going to apply different criteria to different circumstances. If you know, if you're deciding if you should borrow hundreds of thousands of pounds to buy a house, don't like do that and then not be able to course correct.
Yeah.
So be careful how you apply this, but recognizing, is your problem that you don't really trust yourself?
Yeah.
And I am finding in a lot of the conversations around this when it comes to confidence, like literally from Latin, confidence means with faith or with trust. Mm. So we have to have enough deep faith and trust in ourselves that what we're going to do is going to be the right thing for us. And if it isn't, we will then do something else. And leaning deep on into ourselves instead of expecting somebody else. Now, I'm finding a lot of people are trying to ask me, what should I do about this or what should I do about that? And it's like, no. Mm. This is about you recognizing that nobody else can tell you what to do. And I find it slightly worrying in a kind of dystopian, authoritarian sense, that I feel like we're at a point where people are so desperate for answers and their lives are very pressured and stressful, and there's a lot of decisions, and we have become extremely consumerist in the last 40-50 years, and there's so many choices, and everyone wants to be reassured that there's a right answer to everything. And there isn't. There's only a right answer for now and a right answer for you. Nobody can tell you how to raise your child. Nobody can tell you if you're raising your child correctly. Only you can know that. And only you can accept the consequences.
Right. I'm thinking, could we... this is not a question, just a funny observation. Because I was reading... we got a PDF of your book and I got it. I put it on my Kindle. And of course, Kindle comes up with like recommendations. And because that had been downloaded on my Kindle, all these different books would now be recommended.
With the word happy in the title.
No,
probably.
This one came... The Women Without Kids. Ruby Waddington. And I was like, isn't that funny? They think, yeah, only women without kids can have happy high status.
That's so funny.
But it's for all of us, Viv.
What other? Oh, yeah.
Did you write the other recs down?
Oh, the other one was I'm addicted to friendships. I think that was the other recommendation.
Oh, my God, right.
So that's sort of interesting, isn't it?
Very interesting. It might just be like non-fiction books that have been published in the last 6 months.
Yes, I think it's sort of guidance books in that way. But I just thought it was funny, but it's for all of us. Could we use happy high status when dealing with a badly behaved child? And how we deal with that in public. Okay, like, again, this is sort of going back to Sarah's thing of, like, not really so much of when you're a parent, it's just not knowing what's going to come. And I think this is relating to something that regularly happens to me. It's just like your child being naughty, I guess. And it is that thing of, like, you're more worrying about what others think. And we often go on the thing, yeah, this is where I'm going, that, you know, to look in control... I like to think the old-fashioned thing is shout at your child, or, you know, used to be smack, you know, because, she's in control, because she's shouting at whatever. And I'd like to think that's now shifting, but I'm sort of somewhere in the middle, because you sort of hear that voice of going, oh, God, they probably think I'm not in control of this situation, because I'm just very quietly going down to him and trying to do that. Okay, darling. I know that they're trying to do all that.
I dislike the word control.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, control is not great, because we're never really in control of anything. And I think the useful thing, happy high status thing to do in those situations is to remember, and this works for everything in terms of confidence and trusting yourself, don't make it about you. Put your focus on the other person. In this case, it would be the child.
Sorry, everyone, so, my kid's being a little shit. It's not me. Is that what I should...
No, because when you're making it about you, when you worry what other people are thinking about you, you're feeling like this is a wound to your ego as a parent and as an adult. Other people are judging me. They're looking at me. They're criticising me. All that stuff. Just the same as in stand-up. If you're inexperienced, then you think, oh, God, they all think I'm rubbish.
Yeah.
I cut da 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 da. That's so unhelpful, right? You know that. That's really unhelpful. And you should not be thinking that. You should be thinking, what do they need from me? What do they need to hear? How do they need to feel? How do I need to make them feel? So when you're with the child, you need to be thinking, how do I need to make them feel? What do I need to do to make the child feel whatever they need right now, which is heard, supported, I don't want to say controlled, but in some cases, it boundaried,
The boundaried.
And so that might mean just being very quiet and listening to them. And sometimes with a tantrum, let it play out. Just be there for them while it plays out.
Yeah.
And if other people want to look at that and judge it and tut and whatever, that's their problem.
Yeah.
It's not their child.
Yeah.
You're never going to see them again. Who cares what they think? Probably a Daily Mail reader. Why are you caring about what they think?
I do live in a very Daily Mail area. That's my problem.
We all do. We all do. So don't make it about you. That's always the first rule, is are you making this about yourself? And that's a dangerous path to take, because you also don't know what those people are thinking anyway.
No.
So you're actually making a projection of them in your own mind. So it's not even really them. It's actually your own negative judgment that you're putting on yourself. So you're weighing yourself down with all of these criticisms that are getting in the way of you actually doing the thing that you need to do, which is probably nothing.
Yeah.
Which is be present. Be present. And you're right to go down to the level of the child.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
Like, crouch down, be at the same level of eye contact, you know, hold them if that helps, or stand back if it doesn't help.
Hold them.
And just wait, just wait. And if you need to cry, then yeah, cry a little bit. Mm. But again, don't make it about you, because you don't want your child to then have to deal with your emotions. But you also don't want to be like faking it.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes a child needs to see that they've really hurt your feelings, or you're really angry.
Yeah.
But to understand this is a consequence of my behaviour.
It's interesting because, as you know, a lot of time in my life, I don't worry about what other people think of me. Like, you know, when me and my husband talk about, his anxieties are so different to mine. It's so interesting. Like, he just so worries about literally the way he walks into the room, or something that might have happened in Tesco's, and like, oh God, all those people think this of me. And I'm like, they're never going to see me again. What's the matter? You know, but...
Yeah, but you want those people to think you're a good mother.
But yeah. Yeah.
And maybe that's because you don't think you're a good mother.
Bum, bum, bum.
But you are.
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
There's an expression or a word that in your introduction to the book, enoughness. Now,
did I really say that?
Maybe it didn't make the final cut.
I hope it's in massive inverted commas.
It's in inverted commas,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, good. Acceptable in that case.
But
maybe also italics.
I feel like it might have been in italics as well. So so I've heard of the concept of good enough, especially around mum, good enough mum.
Yeah, from Winnicott. Yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah. So I'm really interested in that, you know, it's not so much about exceeding expectations or self-expectations or societal expectations or anything. It's just about it just being in enough, and that's okay.
Yeah, the child psychologist, I think it's D.W. Winnicott or somebody like that. I think it might be Donald. Sorry if he's not called Donald. I think this is from the 40s or the 50s. He had a book called The Good Enough Mother. Mm-hmm. And it was this revolutionary concept of the idea that you don't actually have to do very much to be a decent parent. And I always remember as well, like through the 70s, 80s and 90s, there was a whole... a raft of parenting stuff that was coming out, and it was just on the periphery of my understanding because I didn't have children then, so I wasn't interested in it. But it was loads of research about the fact that parents are actually at the bottom of the list of influences of where children get their ideas from. And it was, in the first place, was their friends. Mm-hmm. It was their cohort. So it's basically, I think all of it has since been slightly debunked and it's no longer fashionable. But it was an idea that if you get in with a bad crowd, doesn't matter who your parents are, it's going to really affect you. Mm. And if you get in with a good crowd, then that's going to benefit you even more than a stable family background. So that's kind of really interesting. That's sort of got a bit lost. Mm. And then also, you know, teachers as an influence, other adults, being part of a community, and that the onus isn't so much on the parents. So the good enough mother was a part of that movement as well, where you don't put all of the onus on the mother to be perfect all of the time and do everything right. It's a bit of a, you know, like if they say in the medical profession, do no harm.
Yes, yeah.
You know, just don't do any harm.
Yeah.
Be just about good enough. And that idea as well of putting, that you will have talked about this a million times on this podcast, but putting your oxygen mask on first.
Yeah.
And for me, when my kids were very little, that was always my first rule of, have I been what I call good selfish? Mm-hmm. So have I done enough selfish things for myself? Like, not selfish in the sense of, oh, everything is mine, like, give me all of your food. I did probably eat quite a lot of their food. But have I done enough things for myself? Have I put that oxygen mask on so that then when I do things for them, I'm not doing it in a spirit of resentment and bitterness.
And quote another one of your books where you say about you can't be a good friend and lift a sister if you've not sorted yourself out.
Exactly. Because we all know those people who are sort of, don't be a compulsive helper as a parent.
Codependent.
Because it's going to come around. It's good in the beginning and you feel great about yourself. But after a while, you're just going to think, oh my God, all I do is give, give, give. And that is where very bad impulses come from after that. We all can't give, give, give. So give to yourself first.
Yeah.
And then you can pretty much do anything because you don't resent anybody.
Yeah.
I drive my friends crazy because I'm always saying, oh, do you want a lift here? And do you want this? And do you want that? And I'll give you this thing or whatever. And they always say, were you sure? I'm like, mate, I don't do anything I don't want to do. Right. And it's true, I don't.
This woman does nothing that she doesn't want to do.
I don't, pretty much. Good. Pretty much. I mean, of course, there are things I have to do. But mostly, and the older I get, the fewer of them I do.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is a lot of all this really...
Just growing old.
It's growing old. That's my only... Does this all apply to... A 16-year-old that we don't have in the room.
Definitely not in the room.
Definitely not in the room. 21-year-old. Does it really apply?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about this recently. I was thinking, are some of the ideas that I'm putting out there basically saying, stop being so mature? Is that what I'm doing? Because I don't want to say that because it sounds really mean. Right. But I do wonder... if the idea of maturity is something that is problematic for us. And I mean people of all ages, actually. Mm. And I think of how adults behaved when I was a child and how different society is now, that we can all behave in different ways at different ages and it's judged in very different ways, although we still have a lot of ageism in both directions towards young people and old people. But there's much more leeway in terms of whether you can be a big kid and what you can get away with and how you can reinvent yourself and all of that stuff. And I do think some of it is around the concept of maturity. And we don't really talk about emotional maturity very much.
No.
And maybe some of it is basically that. Yeah, so the next book I write is going to be called Just Get Older, and it's going to have blank pages. And that's the message.
Yeah,
I do think that it does come with age because it's true, you care less. I'm going to be 50 next week.
Yes,
I know, it's impossible to believe, even on an audio medium. It's impossible to believe.
How does it sit with you?
It sits really good with me because I wrote about it about 6 months ago and I just felt like I've told everyone now and I just let it go. It sits fine. I'm sure I'll wake up on the day itself crying and I'll shave my head and, and get a tattoo. But so far it sits fine with me because I just think about the alternative.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It should sit fine with
Also, my husband's quite old, so he's always going to be older than me.
Oh, how
he's older? He's 8 years older than me, but I call it a decade.
Yeah, round it up.
So he's a decade older than me, so that always makes me feel young.
You see, I'm the opposite. My husband's 8-9 years younger than me. So I'm like, he's going to be pushing me around in my wheelchair. That's what we're saying.
Well, swings and roundabouts,
yeah,
isn't
swings
it?
Swings and roundabouts.
Really?
And I say to him, you can have a whole new life. When I'm gone, you can go off and get a new thing.
Oh, God.
On that note, we're going to start wrapping up in a minute. But, yeah, what else do we want to say, Gemma? Gemma, I feel like, would you say... I would say, because I was thinking about it, I was like, well, I think Gemma is happy, high status. And I would say, definitely. And you have that calmness that I was talking about. I honestly, whether it's all faking it, because I know people that say, oh my God, I'm not really not inside.
The thing is, right, and I don't want to, like, you know, I think it's this thing of, like, I know that there's lots of stuff that I don't know. So there's this, and I know one can't call themselves humble, but, like, And, you know, I don't want to say, you know, I faced hell, but I kind of, I had, but in my early 20s, I was such, but I, like, in my teenage years and early 20s, I was just, I was so miserable that it was just like, it's going to be a long life. Someone once said to me, they asked me, they said, what's the opposite of hate? And I said, love. And they said, no, it's ambivalence. And so I think actually, I just want to feel ambivalent about most things. And for me who's like, who I consider myself quite judgmental, critical of myself and other people, but I do just kind of aim for that kind of middle ground and not try and swing too much.
Yeah, that's something that gets talked about a lot in therapy, is not trying to be happy or trying to overcome, but they would maybe call it neutrality rather than ambivalence.
Yeah.
What's a neutral choice? You know, what's a neutral emotion? what leaves room for something new to emerge, or for this to not be what you think it is.
Yeah.
And I think the idea you said, Gem, of, well, we don't really know anything. I think if you can recognise that, that you can have your mind change, that there's a ton of stuff you don't know, that actually, you know, I've learnt, oh, this sounds so corny and awful, but it's just true. I've learnt so much from my kids. I'm always learning stuff from them about how to see the world differently, about what sort of person I am, and the sort of weird old-fashioned oldie-worldy 20th century ideas that I have, and what might be useful about those ideas but what is also completely not useful anymore. That's brilliant for me. I always want to dig into that and learn more about it. I don't want to know everything. No. I don't know anything, really.
But saying about learning from your kids, Viv, we have a little thing called kid logic. And sometimes kids just say something, you're like, oh my God. Like, I mean, literally sometimes I will ask them advice, even my 7-year-old, just because I am not very good at trusting myself, and that's something I need to work on. But kids just cut through the, don't they? Have you had any kid logic recently? I know they're a bit older, so it's almost adult logic, but it's...
I used to often ask my kids when I was doing a lot of stuff in comedy and I was spending a lot of time and money doing Edinburgh shows and thinking, is this really worth it? And is it taking me away from them too much? And I guess a question that a lot of people who are trying to do something interesting in work are constantly asking yourself, like, is this justified?
Yeah.
You know, psychologically, financially... in terms of marital harmony, all these things. So I sort of tried to ask my kids about this. And they would usually say something along the lines, they'd be quite quiet and try to understand, and I'd realise they didn't really understand what I'm talking about. But then they would say, why do you care? And I was like, oh, that's really interesting.
Right.
Like, why do you care so much whether this is going to work or not? Just do it and see. You'll soon find out.
So nice. Yeah.
Like, don't try and know everything in advance of doing it. Like, do it. Let it be a disaster.
Yes.
And then do something else, or let it work or not work.
Yeah.
Just, why do you care? Like, wait and see.
Which is quite a stoicism type thing as well. And yeah. And improv as well. I'm just,
yeah.
That's what Alex whispers to me when I'm like, oh, what if it goes this way and what if it goes that way? And it's like, what do you care? Just, yeah. Kid logic.
Al's one, so Al, I bought a multi-pack of pants for Al. And two black, two grey and one white. And he put the white pants on. He came up to me and went, white pants, are you sure?
I love the thing you said at the beginning of him saying,
I thought it was going to be better. And
which
I was like, yeah.
So profound.
Yeah, I know.
That tells us more about that.
Life, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I just said to him, I did too, actually. But it's just kind of, we build up expectations and it's just sometimes they're met, sometimes they're exceeded. And it's just like, nah, it's all right. Just put it down to, it's just another day.
And this was
day.
A family party.
Yeah, it's my mum's 70th, yeah.
Because another time his reaction will be, oh, I didn't think it was going to be this great, and it's amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's my favourite thing. Yeah.
That it reminds me of a reaction I had to a comedy show once. I did a preview and I'd explained for quite a long time at the beginning of the preview, like, this is a preview, you know, this is new material. I've got my little clipboard. I'm working out what's working, what's not working. Strap in. It's all going to be fine. And at the end of it, this man in red corduroy trousers, and he'd had folded arms throughout the whole thing, walked past me and said, it didn't work. Okay, fair enough.
Oh God.
Yeah. So I thought it would be better and it didn't work.
How far along was, how do you take that stuff like that?
Well, I actually took that really, really badly on that particular occasion. It was quite early on. It was maybe the second year that I'd done Edinburgh and I still felt a bit green.
Yeah, that's...
And I actually had thought, in terms of how the other previews had gone, it had actually gone quite well.
Oh, that's
so that
worse,
was gutting. And I was absolutely devastated. But I also had a voice emerging at the back of my mind of, like, don't listen to Red Trouser Man.
Oh,
you know, like, don't... you know, still don't really listen to anyone. And also, it's just one out of probably 50 previews that I was doing. But the next day, weirdly, I was doing it at a festival, and the next day I went to do another gig, interview somebody or something at this festival, and I bumped into the photographer who had been taking pictures of everything. And he came up to me and he said, "That thing that you did yesterday is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen at this festival."
There you go.
And I was like, he wasn't right. And neither was Red Trouser Guy.
Okay.
Like, neither of them were right. But for him, he found it really exciting and amazing to see somebody doing something unfinished and kind of bold and like, let's just see if this works. I don't know if this is going to work. He found that really exciting, whereas Red Trouser Man found that just horrific.
Yeah, he wants
and,
slick,
and neither of them are right. But it kind of taught me, there's going to be loads of opinions about what you do.
For every red corduroy trousers, there is a photographer.
There is. Oh. He was a bit scandy as well.
One was scandy? Photographer.
The photographer. Yeah, he's a bit of Morton Harkett vibes.
Ooh. Oh, hello.
Yeah.
And then she married him.
Yeah.
Well, I think we should just. I don't know if it is connected to happy high status, but I think end on that because I think it's so important. We talk about it, to give praise. We so forget to give praise to everyone. And I don't just mean, like, come up to me when I've done a show. I mean, like, I saw somebody in Sainsbury's go up to, "Excuse me, are you the manager? I just wanted to say, that guy, the worker down there, he was so helpful, blah, blah, blah." Aww. And I wanted to kiss that woman because I thought, we don't do that enough. I was doing some cover work in a school and the teacher was so lovely. And because I've been doing a little bit of this lately, I've seen quite a few teachers and it's all a hard blooming job. But this one was so good and I couldn't stop telling her at the end of the day. I was just like, "You are brilliant, blah, blah, blah." And I just think we needed to give more praise.
Yeah, I agree.
Because we're quick to complain. And I know it takes, you know, it might be embarrassing or whatever, but it'll make you feel good as well, doesn't it, Viv?
Well, it's the two rules of confidence to wrap up everything that we've talked about. Number one is don't make it about you. Mm-hmm. And number two, which is they're both the same thing really, is gift confidence to someone else.
Right.
So however little confidence you have, you can think, wait a minute, it's not about me. Rule number one, it's not about me. How do I make other people feel confident?
Right.
So give them a compliment. Tell them they're doing okay. Tell them, you know, you're having a good hair day or I see you, basically, in the parlance of the young people.
Yeah.
Give other people confidence. We don't think that is going to make us confident, but it actually does.
Perfect. Thank you, Viv Groskop. And this will go out hopefully on the... it comes out on the 6th, is that right?
This coming out tomorrow.
No.
The book.
Is it the audio book that's coming out on the 6th?
Oh, no. Probably.
Something's
very
coming
possibly,
out.
Yes, very possibly.
Anyway, it'll be out now. You'll be listening right now and it's out. It's out. Go buy it. Go download it. Do whatever you need to do to get it in your ears. Is there anything else you'd like to mention, Viv? Or?
No, I just want to say in the spirit of that, you know, thank you to you guys because I really appreciate your support. And, you know, you've seen me do some really crappy things on stage and still stayed friends with me. So how bad can it be?
It makes me feel better about myself.
So I'm so glad to have given you that gift, Tati Ashdown.
Jokes. But, yeah, no, thank you. I could do a whole podcast just thanking you, Viv, because you are, like, my secret mentor and big me up. And I got a gig, two more gigs this week, and it's connected to you.
Oh, I'm so glad.
I'm doing Wilderness Festival.
Oh, brilliant.
Because of you.
Oh, it's lovely there.
So, you know, honestly, and thank you for my thank you in the book. I've never been thanked in a book.
Oh.
You've been listening to the Funny Mummies podcast. Thank you to my co-host today, my guest, and today's show is edited by Scott Kingsnorth. Thank you so much for listening and supporting this show. If you'd like to support it more, I know you can do even more. You can follow us on Instagram at funnymummies_podcast, and that will tell you all the updates. You can also support us by buying us a coffee or something on one of these fangled things called Ko-Fi. I'll give you the whole address. It's ko-fi.com/HattieAshdown_funnymummiespod. Got that? Thank you for listening, subscribing, and taking the time. for you. Happy Mother's Day! Happy Mother's Day!